Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Chris Murphy, Senator Chris Murphy, let's talk about free community colleges. To me, this is one of the great ideas of all time. But then again, I'm old and I went to Hunter College in the Bronx when it was absolutely free. And I looked around and I saw all kinds of people who would never have been given a chance to go to college if it cost $100, let alone any more than that. So I'm a big fan of what I'm hearing, but it looks like a sort of non-starter. Am I wrong?
You're not wrong, but it's kind of crazy to understand why it's a non-starter, in the sense that, you know, there has been for generations a bipartisan consensus around a simple idea that we are going to make enough education free so that you can get a good job. Right? I mean, that's what we basically said. That's why we pegged it at 12th grade, because, you know, back in the 1930s, you know, 12th grade was enough to get a really good job. Frankly, you didn't even need 12th grade to get a good job. That was more than you needed in order to get a good job back when manufacturing jobs were plentiful. Well, that's a different world now. 12th grade isn't enough to get, for most people, for some people, but for the majority of people, 12th grade isn't enough to get a job that's going to be able to allow you to pay the bills, save for college, save for retirement. And so the new standard is clearly at least a two-year degree, which is what the community colleges grant, and probably a four-year degree. So I guess, you know, I don't understand why we're disagreeing over this, because Republicans will admit that what a college degree is today, a high school degree was 50 years ago. And if that's the case, why don't we move the bar in terms of what we pay for? $60 billion, which is what it would cost to give everybody free community college for 2 years, that's a lot of money. I'm not sneezing at $60 billion. But compared to, you know, what we just spent on a, you know, misguided and disastrous war in Iraq, $2 trillion, it's a drop in the bucket. And so, yeah, I think the bottom line is that Republicans are not going to support this over the next 2 years. But, boy, it's a political winner out there. I've been talking about it in Connecticut, and people love it because it's a good idea.
Can we talk about foreign relations for a moment?
Sure.
Okay. I'm fascinated by the President Obama's trip to Saudi Arabia. That's sort of a very double-edged sword. I mean, they're our friends. But on the other hand, if you look at the human rights records, it's sort of abysmal. I wonder what you make of that.
Well, you know, I mean, that's the world that we live in, right? I mean, we've got, you know, relationships with two edges all across the continent, the Chinese, the Russians, the Saudis, the Egyptians. And we live with it because, you know, in the end, the president and Congress is charged with protecting U.S. national security interests and creating a relationship with the Saudis that still choose to funnel a lot of money into, you know, very bad people and very bad organizations is important for us. And of course, you know, there's a lot of consternation in the region right now as ISIS starts to spread its wings and become a greater threat to the world, as countries, Sunni countries like Saudi Arabia, worry about Iran being brought back into the legitimate world community to an extent with baby steps if a nuclear agreement is signed. And so it's an important relationship for the United States. And, you know, I ultimately want us to be pushing human rights issues wherever we go, but I understand that we can't not have relationships with countries simply because we don't agree with the way in which they treat their citizens.
So that brings us in the same region or over here to the question of whether Netanyahu, the Israeli premier, should be invited to the Congress without even telling, to address the Congress without even telling the president. Look, I'm Jewish. I love Israel. I've been a fierce partisan for years. I just don't think it's right of Netanyahu to accept this, knowing full well what he's doing.
It's hard to understand why anybody thought this was a good idea. You know, this is a very clear violation of protocol and a real embarrassment to the administration. You know, I want Netanyahu to come speak to Congress, but I think the White House would support that. But it can't happen as part of a political slap in the face to the president. You know, for those of us that are strong supporters of Israel, you know, it hurts our cause when This is when Israel becomes a partisan issue. And so, you know, I'm hopeful that we can put this behind us. I wish that Speaker Boehner would, you know, would have done this differently. It doesn't change, you know, my position. I'm going to continue to be a strong supporter of Israel and defend their interests, which are our interests. But it certainly was a mistake.
Let me switch subjects once again and go to, we keep hearing, if the House impeaches the president, so are we going to have to go through that again?
No, they're not going to. Boehner would never entertain that. There's a handful of fringe Republicans that are talking about that. There's absolutely no grounds for it. And, you know, listen, Boehner's got his hands full over there. He's responsible in part for creating the Tea Party, so I don't have any sympathy for him, except that it creates pretty miserable governance. But, you know, again, like McConnell, I mean, Boehner is, you know, someone who does believe in the institution, and he's created a monster that has now raged out of control and controls his caucus, being the Tea Party. But, no, we're not going to have an impeachment debate in the House.
Well, I keep making him cry.
Well, you know, he's an emotional guy. These are, you know, emotional times.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about immigration. I just can't make heads or tails of what's really going on here. I know that you're concerned about it. I know that you've had definite ideas about it. But obviously, we're just not getting off the dime.
Yeah, but here's the bottom line. What's going on here is that if you want to look at why the United States is growing at 3% a clip on an annual basis, and the rest of the world effectively is in economic lockdown, China's growth rate slowing, Europe at a standstill, the story is, you know, part energy, but a big part immigration, right? Our demographics in this country allow us to continue to grow. Well, Europe gets older and older, Asia gets older and older, the United States stays young as a country because of immigration. So that's the story of our economic greatness in the past, and it's part of the story as to why we continue to grow while the rest of the country doesn't. So that's the bottom line, and I think the president, in recognizing that it's part of our economic success story, wants to protect it. And so he can't wait for Congress any longer to pass a law. He's got 11 million people that are here without the resources with which to send them all back to their home countries. So he had to make a call, and I think he made the right one, prioritizing people who are here without documentation who have children here, effectively. I believe he's got the constitutional ability to do that. And if Congress doesn't like it, well, then Congress can override it tomorrow by passing a law that sets new rules.
But there's a political perspective also. Seems to me it's got to be a little bit of suicide for the Republicans, considering how many people of Hispanic background are in this country.
Yeah, you know, if you know, you look at the states that you have to win as a Republican presidential candidate, Colorado, New Mexico, Florida, and you look at the tack that the Republicans have taken, it's hard to understand how they are going to ever be able to win a presidential election. And listen, I wish that Republicans came to the table on this issue because the policy was right. But if it's politics that gets them there, well, then in the end, I'll take it. But they don't seem to show any signs of turning around. You know, last weekend they had one of these anti-immigration summits in Iowa, and a good number of the, you know, highest-profile contenders for the Republican nomination trotted out to Iowa to show how anti-immigrant they were. And so that's a brand that the Republicans still seem to want to own. From a policy perspective, it's disastrous. From a political perspective, not much less.
We've been talking to Senator Chris Murphy, who used to be Congressman Chris Murphy, and who is now keeping his word and showing up to talk to everybody on WAMC, particularly, I think, everybody but those in his Connecticut constituency. Chris, we love talking to you. When we come back the next time, I'm going to ask you about Cuba.
Sounds good.